Jack Hitt says if you drill down into the American spirit to find out what makes Americans so American, you'll find it's the fact that we're all amateurs at heart. In his new book, Bunch of Amateurs, A Search for the American Character, he pinpoints the first American to use the amateur label to his advantage, Benjamin Franklin. Jack Hitt is a contributing editor to the New York Times Magazine, Harper's, and Public Radio's This American Life. He also writes for Rolling Stone, GQ, Wired, and, of course, Garden and Gun. He has also won the Peabody Award. Jack Hitt, welcome to the roundtable. Great pleasure to have you with us this morning. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Let us begin with Benjamin Franklin. Is that where you began when you started to investigate all of this?
Well, I've, like many people, I've gone through many different founding father sort of obsessions. Like any good pretentious intellectual, I started with Jefferson.
Yes.
You know, worked my way through him. You know, got to George Washington, who was this very sort of instinctual leader. You know, had this great grasp of how to move men without a lot of intellectual fodder and, you know, that kind of thing. And then eventually, you know, you sort of wind up, you know, kind of coursing through some Madison, maybe some Hamilton. I've arrived at the Franklin phase of my life. And I'm totally obsessed with this man, in part because, you know, he's so falsely presented as this kind of big, fat, jolly Santa Claus of a founding father.
Right.
In fact, he's just this far more cunning fellow and far more crucial to sort of like the whole origin of the American idea. You know, Franklin is really the first of a great long list of people who dropped out of college and went on to become super famous and rich. He in those days, he was an apprentice to his brother, who was an established printer, and there was a whole course of study that one was to do to become a journeyman, you know, and then a master. And Franklin just decided this was all boring. He was like 15, 16 years old, and he fled Boston, ran away, jumped on a boat, went down to Philly, and sort of invented this whole other Ben Franklin, the one we have come to know. And of course, revived and reinvented something that we now call modern American journalism. He was the first person in this country to sort of write in a sort of casual, funny tone. He told funny stories. He impersonated people. Many of his pseudonyms were middle-aged women. He was a great sort of force for just cheerfulness and new ideas in this new country. And so, yeah, I turned to him as sort of the first sort of self-invented amateur tinkerer in American culture.
What's interesting about his story, of course, is that while brilliant, not very focused. I mean, he was all over the place.
Sure, but there was a lot of places to be all over in those days.
Right.
We didn't really know anything about anything. In fact, I mean, a lot of the complaints about innovation today is that, you know, it's all very specialized and micro-niched. You know, this is a guy who, we didn't understand what electricity was. We didn't understand what lightning was in those days. You know, we didn't understand really anything. And Franklin's sort of like polymath skills just sort of moved him from, you know, inventing fire departments and bifocals and discovering what electricity was and so on. And that sort of glorious renaissance of amateur pursuit still sort of, I think, lingers in everybody's mind as some glorified era that's passed and that we've moved beyond it. But as I argue in the book, it's actually a cycle that sort of comes back around. And I think we're smack dab in the middle of one right now.
So what brings a man or a woman to their garage and say, I'm going to do this? I'm going to create something.
Well, if you believe the etymology of the word love, amateur comes from the Latin amoa mas amat. And really that the significance of that word implies that somebody goes off to do something not because they're getting paid, but because they just want to do it. They love this idea, and to the point of almost an obsession. They can't not do it, you know. You know, the garage is sort of this temple of American ingenuity in our culture. I love pointing out that the David Packard's garage, where he and William Hewlett holed up in 1938 to invent sort of a lot of our modern American machinery, has been restored and is now a registered landmark in Palo Alto, California, in part because I think we Americans just instinctively recognize that that move of walking out of the house and into the garage is somehow this kind of mythic journey that kind of replicates the going west young man or the immigrant narrative itself, all of the sort of stories that we tell in America kind of arrive in miniature in that idea of like leaving behind the spouse and the bills and the kids and walking out to this enchanted place where we can, you know, invent a new version of ourselves and or a new version of energy or, you know, a new car or whatever it is.
Yeah. What's fascinating about the amateur, as you describe them in the book, is that, look, they don't have any money, there's no power, there's no prestige, which lets them actually see what they're doing and focus on that.
Yeah, and there's another aspect to it that I discovered when I was hanging out with this young amateur biologist in San Francisco, this young woman who was trying to insert a glow-in-the-dark gene from a jellyfish into bacterium that she could then grow into yogurt and make glow-in-the-dark yogurt, glogurt, as she called it.
Yeah.
So we were out there sort of fooling around in her homemade lab in her kitchen, and we spent days failing. And one of the things I realized is that when you've invented your own lab, when you've created everything that you're working with, and when you're sort of just following this wonderful vision towards some great end, then failure doesn't really register as failure. You don't get fired for it, obviously. You don't get chastised by your boss. In fact, it's just seen as a kind of another step towards success. And so there was really no amount of failure that we could endure that just somehow didn't motivate us to just keep moving on, you know? And whereas I think in a paid workplace, in fact, many managerial scientists who study this kind of thing point this out constantly, which is that paid work, we're often afraid to fail. And so those avenues of discovery are often closed off to paid researchers because they're too afraid to take a big chance on some new idea because then they suspect that they might waste corporate resources and be fired. Whereas the amateur can sort of wander all out into the wildest frontiers of the imagination and find things. Of course, often they find perpetual motion and cold fusion and other, you know, kind of nonsense. That's the risk and the price.
Well, one of the other things that you talk about, if there is a challenge or a dark side to this, is that fraudulence, you say, always seems to lie at the heart of many of these pursuits, concerned about that they don't have the right credentials or the background or something else that nags them as they're working on these things.
Yeah, you know, I think this is all part of that kind of this idea of self-invention that comes with being a nation of indentured servants and slaves and Puritans driven out from other countries. I mean, all of us arrived here kind of like under duress, no matter what the immigrant journey was. Let me just say, it's a great piece of American propaganda that we came here for religious liberty and freedom and this kind of thing. I think that's the kind of gloss we put on it after we got here.
Mm.
I think if you look back in our history, most of us arrived here under very questionable circumstances. Even the Puritans, whom we glorify, were actually driven out of England because they were widely despised as terrorists and extremists, right? And there were far more indentured servants in the 18th century than we like to admit. But what comes with that is an entire sort of like winnowing of a people that are driven to reinvent a new version of themselves, right? The people change their names here. They change their family histories. They lied about who they were. And there's always in sort of amateur pursuits I just constantly ran up against it, the sense of fraudulence, the sense of like, I don't really belong here, but I'm putting on this funny hat and calling myself this, right? And you find that, and Ben Franklin did it. I mean, you know, most of his most famous pen names, you know, Silence Duguid was a middle-aged housewife. I mean, that for whatever reason, and I explore it, but I don't know if I ever really nail it, there is just a sense of pretending to be something else. That's the way in to making these discoveries.
And we're out of time, but also the wonderful aspect of just being able to play, of going into a room and saying, I'm going to make Glogurt.
Right. You know, having no sort of boundaries or definition, just being able to wander sort of aimlessly in vague pursuit of some idea is, like I said, one of these kind of wonderfully creative ways of discovering things that these managerial scientists try to bottle and try to put into the corporate workplace, but never quite successfully.
Jack Hitt is the author of the book Bunch of Amateurs, A Search for the American Character. It's published by Crown. Jack, thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank
Great
you.
Talking to you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.